The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Yes, Owen Sheehan is with me from Off the Ball to place his favourite read on the Hard Shoulder bookshelf. Owen, was this a difficult question?
No, it was reflex.
Really? Bang, you know the answer.
Bang, I know the answer. Maybe if I thought a little bit deeper about it, I might have come up with something that maybe is more relatable to me, maybe is more meaningful to my entire life. I can actually relate to maybe the narrative of it. I hope I can't relate to the narrative of this book in any way possible. It's just something that I remember reading for the first time, I don't know, 2016, 2017, and just being blown away by how horrifying it is as a book because of how real some of the characters are in it.
What is the book? Who wrote it? And tell us the story.
The book is In Cold Blood by Truman Capote. And what it's about is a small town called Holcomb in Kansas, sort of a Midwestern area of the United States, where there is a quadruple murder one night. Now, the amazing thing about this book is that you know who the murderers are and you know how they've committed the murder. But what you actually don't really find out throughout the book is why they've done this and what on earth was the motive behind this, which actually creates the horrifying nature around this. Very early in the book, you get the story of how they did this and who did it. But actually trying to get into the minds of these two murderers is what makes this fascinating. And I was trying to think back yesterday, did I or did I not know that this was a true story before reading it? I think at the time I wasn't sure. I think there might be something in the introduction that suggests it is a true story, but because of the realness of the characters, I just presumed that it must have been fiction because you're getting proper dialogue between the men as they're preparing and planning out this quadruple murder. You have the conversations with these men on death row. As it turns out, what actually happens here is that Capote spends a lot of time on death row with these inmates when they are awaiting basically being hanged. And the interviews that he compiles with them are absolutely astonishing, where he puts together this texture-filled story of how these two men arrived at a place where they murdered a family of four.
Yeah, and it's particularly gruesome as well, this book. I mean, there's great description of the murders and how and what happens in the house. It's awful.
It really is. And again, you kind of remember passages from the book more than any others. The thing for me that sticks out to it is the way he tells the story of the murder happening is that he paints the picture of the two lads in the car, and then there's this one paragraph where he says the lights are turned off, presently the car drives down the road, and that's it. And then the next scene is a local family who is dropping off a child to go to church with his family, arriving at a house where the cars are parked outside, where nobody appears to be up. And then they describe the screams that are coming from the house as a mother and her child actually discover the first body in the house. That's probably the reason why this has always stuck with me, is that it is such a horrific tale of truth. But also just the journalism that's involved in this is absolutely incredible. I know there have been some claims of non-factuality from certain aspects, and I think Capote himself has said that he would do these interviews with the locals in the town of Holcomb and not record a single thing, not use a notebook, but he could prove that 90% of the content would be perfectly accurate. I don't know, did he do some tester or something, but he has a photographic memory, he says, and wouldn't be walking around with a notebook. So maybe not exactly giving himself too much credit there with regards to being fully accurate.
When you read it, obviously it had an impact on you. Were you in any way disappointed that there wasn't a motive? Yeah, I think they stole a few kind of trinkets from the house and a bit of cash, didn't they, if I can remember the story. Not much, but it definitely wasn't a burglary gone wrong or anything. And there's never a clear explanation as to why they decided to kill all these people in this particular house.
But I think there was a clear motive for one of them. One of them wanted a better life. They wanted to get very rich off what the cash that was promised in this house.
Because there was like $50 or something, was there?
That's what they came away with.
Yeah.
But there was promise of plenty of cash from this farmer who, to be fair, I think employed plenty of people on his farm, was very, very rich. And these two murderers were incarcerated previously. They'd met a guy in jail, and that man in jail said, I worked for this farmer in Kansas. You should go to his house because he's got loads of cash. So one of the two People who were convicted of this and hung for this basically said, I want to get out of the country with all this cash, whereas his partner in crime had a difference of opinion and thought it wasn't necessary to actually flee it. And it's kind of unusual because you do start to tell the difference between the two guys as Capote paints them. He's very sympathetic towards one of them and the other one is seen as a little bit more of an evil presence. And it is a story of how both men, you could make a very arguable case were insane, but in the trial, both of their analysis of their brains and of their behaviours were not actually allowed into the consideration to actually getting them off the hook for the death penalty.
Yeah, listen, it's a great book, In Cold Blood by Truman Capote. When did you read it, did you say?
2017, I think.
Have you read it since? Would you read it again?
I have read it once since. Yeah, I totally would. Totally would. It's an amazing book. It's absolutely brilliant. It should have been a co-written book. Harper Lee did go with him to Kansas to do this, and she was left off the byline, let's say. I don't think she was best pleased, but I suppose she did write an unbelievable piece of work not too long after that about a certain place in the United States.
So often it is difficult for people to make a choice, so we allow them honourable mention of something else. Have you anything else you'd like to mention?
Yeah, this is far more self-indulgent. This is In Patagonia by Bruce Chatwin. So this was a recommendation I got while I was down there hitchhiking the year before last, and somebody wrote a beautiful passage. And I was like, oh, that's an amazing piece of poetry. Can I put that on my story? And he's like, have you not read the book that I'm quoting here? And it was just this beautiful description of being out in a deserted road in basically the desert in Patagonia and hearing what you think is a truck changing gear, but actually all it is the wind. And then you see a little dot in the horizon and you're sure it's a truck coming your way to pick you up. And actually all it is a sheep walking across the horizon. And it very much resonates with my own experience down there. But I couldn't possibly come close to what Bruce Chatwin did down there with regards to the poetry that he managed to espouse from his own thing. So certainly visiting Welsh Patagonia.
Did you read it while you were there or after you came back?
When I came back. And for the podcast, I do quote a couple of passages from it because it is just so good. Some of the information from it is remarkable as well. I wasn't really aware of how important Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid are to Argentina and to South America in terms of that part of their story. And I think his own trip basically started where he was fascinated by a piece of fur, I think it was, on his grandmother's mantelpiece. And apparently he thought when he was a child, it's a little piece of Brontosaurus. As it turned out, it was some Mylodon, the old, a former species of sloth. And he was fascinated with nature and animals. And he made it his life's mission to go to Patagonia and to find this Mylodon or this Brontosaurus, as he so thought it was, and eventually he managed to make the trip. So it's a quest. It's a story of these borderline mythological creatures in this day and age, and him going to find them.
And would it be worth the read for somebody who's never been to Patagonia?
Yes, it's the best travel book I've ever read.
Really?
It's absolutely phenomenal. Like
big claim.
Some people, I was just
big,
before I came
big up, claim.
It is, but it's fair. Well, it's not really. It's the best travel book I've ever read.
All right. So,
and I'm not saying it's the best ever, but I was reading a Paris Review piece about it earlier on, and the author was saying, well, he doesn't really do much hiking. He doesn't really describe the mountains and all that. I'm like, who cares? He describes the people and the crazy individuals that he encounters down there so brilliantly, and it's a story of solitude, but it's also a story of the kind of the international community that was so sparsely populated around Patagonia in the mid 20th century. And he's just a phenomenal writer. Oh, as well.
Do you wish you had read it beforehand, or do you think
yes.
if you had read it? Oh, really?
Definitely, it would have made things.
Do you not think maybe that it would have coloured your it wouldn't have been your interpretation? You would have just been looking for kind of markers.
Yeah, and actually, to be fair, yeah, maybe I would have been put off it because somebody else has already done this thing on certain respects, certainly things that I related to. But then I could have gone...
Or you'd be waiting to feel the way Bruce Chatwin felt or Chatwin felt at certain points of the journey as opposed to feeling your own feelings.
Well, it's true, he doesn't actually speak too much about how he feels. It's actually very staccato, short sentences, but while doing that also very descriptive in terms of what you actually take from the page. He doesn't really get into how he feels at the time, whereas that's kind of more my angle and things.
June in Kildare is after getting in touch to say she grew up in Illinois and she went to school with a girl who came from that small Kansas town where the murders took place in Cold Blood, and her family moved from the town after it happened.
I definitely have seen pieces written that Capote messed their town up beyond the murders because of how much of a spotlight was put on it through this book. It is fascinating, though, how much we are interested in these places as characters in these sort of true crime stories. Like, you can't help but think about, say, that the series of documentaries on West Cork, for example, and the fact that that is very much a remote area where it's not highly populated, it's not an urban area where this murder takes place, that almost makes it more fascinating, because like the darkness and the solitude almost become factors in how horrifying it is. As I say, that description of them turning off the lights, driving up the road to the farm, is the one passage that always sticks with me from that book.
June as well says that Bruce Chatwin wrote another beautiful book called The Song Lines.
Haven't read it.
There you go. Your next read. What was your last read, or what are you currently reading?
John Giles, A Football Man. We've got him for a live show in the Sugar Club in a few weeks' time, his retirement show. And also, it's quite embarrassing that I haven't read it.
Have you not?
Yeah, it's my first time reading it. So A Football Man is currently what I'm going through. It's amazing. I've never met a more consistent man in my entire life.
In what way?
His strong opinions that he would voice on Thursday nights on Off the Ball are voiced in exactly the same way in the book. Like the selection committee, he used to pick the Ireland team instead of one single manager. He does not like the selection committee, and his level of displeasure is the same now as it was 40, 50 years ago. His displeasure for Jimmy Armfield, his manager at Leeds United, certainly comes across on the radio as it would have done 50 years ago, as it was this year. And interesting,
there's no sign of a mellowing or a kind of, on mature reflection, I've decided to change my views of Jimmy Armstrong.
No, and I kind of respect that. He's a very, very consistent man. Although when you look back through it, because to be fair, I did leaf through it for the 50 year anniversary of the European Cup final in 75 this year. And it's a very short passage on that match, which is one of the most famous games he played in. I guess he didn't really want to write too much about one of the biggest robberies in the European Cup history.
All right. It is John Giles' book, Footballing Man, A Football Man. When is the show in the Sugar Club?
It's in August. It's next month, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, next month for sure. Yeah. Sometime between the first day and the last day of August.
Indeed.
Sorry, Owen wasn't expecting to be asked that. I'm only here to talk about books.
Tickets are sold out. Tickets are sold out, so I can't remember the date. We're not pushing it at the moment.
Remember it now. Owen Sheehan from Off the Ball. The lads will be with you from 7 o'clock this evening, as always.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.